Let's get this party started. Let's get it started in here.
This is part two. Although part one has been months ago. So
not for me.
The listeners, it might not be, and for Roberto isn't, but ironically, the one who's supposed to be directing this whole mess hasn't seen it in 2 months. 3 months? 4 months? I don't know.
We recorded in February, of all things.
And it is May 27th to date it. Gotcha.
No, I think it was November.
It's November? Holy
yeah.
Crap. Yeah, that's when I hurt myself. Sounds about right. It's crazy stuff. Crazy, crazy stuff. That was the last podcast that went out. Anyway. Welcome to the Quest for Power, where we are rating and reviewing the mythical, legendary, and historical characters of Celtic, Norse, and Germanic traditions of Europe. As always, I'm your unreliable narrator, and with me is my favorite Chaos Goblin.
Hello, my name is Roberto. I am totally not eating Andres Leche's cake right now.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Not gonna lie. Oh yeah, that does look really good.
I'm not eating anything, Michael. Come on. Munch, munch.
Yeah, munch, 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 munch. There's a podcast that I listen to that really hates, that like leans into people hating, you know, eating food. And it makes me think of my sister-in-law who cannot stand anyone chewing their food.
Well, this is why I edit things out.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, Roberto. So with that, today we are doing Maka, Nuda, and Baelor of the Evil Eye.
Baelor!
What do you remember / just edited?
Absolutely nothing.
You forgot it all already.
Oh boy, I'm a busy person.
We are off to a great start.
Okay, no. So here's what I remember. In the aftermath of the battle with whoever was his name, Nuda lost his arm. Yep. He is then deposed by Brez, who was born from a union with a Fomorian and a Tuatha De. I said a lot of these people were, but he was trying to keep the kingdom together, but in the aftermath of his battle with what's their faces?
The Fomorians?
Not the Fomorians, the other guys.
Oh, the Firbolg.
The Firbolg, yeah. Trying to help the Tuatha De recover after fighting from the Firbolg. The Fomorians attacked the Tuatha Dé's most evil enemy, and led by them, the aptly named Baelor of the Evil Eye. But wait, flashback, we go back in time, all the way to when Baelor's just a small but fresh prince, and he goes into a druidic ceremony, and gets some evil eye casted on him. But wait, here's the thing. It's permanent, so his eye is magically transformed into the evil eye, which, case in point, is where J.R.R. Tolkien got his thing for Sauron.
Did he really take from Baelor?
Yes.
That's super awesome.
Because Baelor, as a Fomorian, potentially only had one eye.
Yeah.
So, or he had eyes on his back of his head or stuff like that. Anyways.
They have varied a lot of different descriptions of Baelor.
Yeah. So, that happened. Baelor is like, found out that, oh, your grandson's going to kill you. But lo and behold, you know, you only had a single daughter. So what do you do with a girl who can have kids that can kill you? Well, you lock her up in a tower.
This has been done so many times in myths, but they've never just slay the daughter. Not saying you should, but I'm just saying if you're trying to avoid prophecy and you're going to be evil about it, why not do it the right way?
Oh, like that one Irish king. Oh, I was supposed to slay my daughter? I thought you meant lay with her.
Oh, sure. Oh, that guy. Oh,
that guy sucks. Anyways, yeah. So Baelor locks his daughter up in the castle or in a tower off the coast where it's like very hard to access. Stormy seas. It's on a rock. And wouldn't you have it? There's this one guy who lost his cow and was like, you know what? In revenge for losing my cow, I'm going to
sleep with this man's daughter.
Yeah, because Baylor kept stealing his cows, right?
He stole his one cow, which was apparently
his favorite cow.
Glorious cow. There's actually other, I didn't put it in there, but there are like several other tales involving this cow.
Okay, we didn't need all that. We just need to know this cow is important. But here's the thing. Baylor stole this guy's cow, and this guy was like, you know what? You stole my cow. I'm going to screw with you, and I'm going to basically kill all the damn kulaks and form the Bolshevik Party and have an uprising and take over Russia. Wrong podcast.
I was going to say, I don't know what you're talking about there. There's no uprising.
No, because Lenin famously had his cow stolen, and that led that was his villain arc. So this guy, whose name I forget, because there's so many names that I don't need to remember, unless they're the main three. Kian, yes, Kian. He had his cow stolen, and then he was like, you know what? I'm going to go, he meets with this one witch, and she's like, I'm going to go seduce. Or she's like, no, you need to go daughter. Sleep with her. Yeah, so he's like, all right, I guess I have to. Then he sees her, he's like, oh, no, I have to sleep with her. What a pity.
Oh, damn. I hate my life.
And then when he got in that woman, he's like, yeah, this is better than my cow. So yeah, he leaves, she gets pregnant. Then, of course, she tried hiding it as much as possible. And then, of course, there's one thing that happens when you're pregnant, and that is the baby has to come out. And you can't hide it then, because there's a new baby in your arms. Well, Baylor heard all about this, was upset, and was like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to throw this baby out the window. So he throws the baby out the window, and that's how we get, not Brez, but somebody else. Lou. That's how we get Lou, who hasn't made an entrance into the story yet, but I'm assuming he will.
He's only one of the most important Irish gods.
Yeah, but you haven't introduced him into the show yet, like, as an adult. He's just been adopted into a family, and he's just, like, living his best life. But anyways, that happens. So the Fomorians are attacking the Tuatha De. They enslave them. Tuatha De nobility is like, you know what? Brez is not that great, which includes Brez's wife, who got him into power in the first place. And then they stage a revolt. Brez is kicked out. Nuala gets his arm back through some magical healing. So he can be king again because he's not impaired. And we left it at that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
This sort of more is a reminder for Michael than for me.
Yeah, with that, if I recall correctly, a druid came in and basically used Vicious Mockery, Nat 20, and Vicious Mockery is way more powerful than it is in D&D. And he started having boils on his skin. Ergo, he is now deformed, therefore cannot be king. He's deposed. So Brez is Mother Eru. And those loyal to him set sail for his father's people. Eru is pretty big and important. In fact, that's like one of the names for Ireland. So it's kind of where we get it from is from his mother. While they're on the ship in a quiet moment, and it's just the two of them, Brez's mother comes up to him and puts this nice golden ring on Brez's finger.
My precious!
It fits perfectly. If you recall, can't believe I remember this, all the way back when Brez first seduced Eru, he gave her the finger after laying with her for an hour, and then she was sobbing, and then he's like, listen, here's a ring. Put it on someone whose finger it fits. We come full circle. Anyway.
Like a ring.
Yeah. And so they landed on the beach and they saw this vast plain dotted with thousands of tents, smokes from hundreds of fires. And, you know, they're walking closer. You can hear the pounding of hammers into hot metal. And there's this massive tent and this huge assembly. There's painted shields, entrance guards with iron spears. And the Fomorian guards are, you know, they're on their benches drinking from their horns. And they're like, who are you?
Your mom.
He did not say that. Brez says, oh, we are men of Ireland. And
Ireland name. Let's go.
And the lords looked at them and asked a question. You have dogs? Why don't you race against our dogs? And Bree goes, you know what? We do have dogs.
So dog racing time?
So they have dog racing time. They brought out the animals and they set them running across the field. The Irish hounds reached the marker posts while the Fomorian dogs were only halfway there. So, you know, this is the Irish are just that even their dogs are better.
Have you not heard about the Irish greyhound?
I know of the Irish Greyhounds only because of the Iron Druid. That's it.
No, they're buses.
Boo. You're not even a dad yet. They challenged the newcomers to a horse race. Same results. The Irish mounts left the Fomorian horses eating dust. And then finally a lord went, any of you good with a sword? And Bree went, yes, I am. He drew his blade. Brez, not Bree. Bree is...
a podcaster.
Bree is a podcaster. Anyway, only Brez stepped forward, and when he drew his blade, raised his sword hand, and in this group, the king of this group, who was quiet, grabbed Bree's hand and stared at the golden ring on his finger with his sword in hand. And he went, who are you? And before Brez could speak, his mother appeared behind him and said, your son. King dismissed everyone present, told to treat the newcomers with hospitality, and then beckoned Eru and Brez to another room.
Oh, is this actually his dad?
This is his dad.
Well, shit. Guess who's back? Do-do-do-do. Back again. Ben. Alatha's back. Do-do-do-do. Tell a friend. Alatha's back, Alatha's back, Alatha's back, Alatha's back. Do 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 do.
Anyway, after Alatha broke out into song and dance, Eru told Alatha everything. Pretty much what happened after what happened on the night of the beach, the child she raised around, how that child became king of Ireland and lost it all. And after the tale, Alatha looked at his son and said, why have you come? And Brez says, revenge. My people despise me for trying to save them. Now I will destroy them.
Ah, villain origin stories.
His father thought for a moment. He went, go to Baelor. Offer your sword. If you demonstrate your prowess and skill in battle as an ally to him, and you prove you're a better fighter than you are a king, he will reward you greatly.
Wasn't Brez known for his fighting, though?
He is known for his fighting, but these are Fomorians who are like giants, you know, like they're the equivalent of giants that are beyond formidable, borderline demigods.
3, 5, 4, 5. I smell the blood of an Irishman.
And so when Brez approached Baelor, the king laughed at him. He went, all right, fine. He sent 7 of his best fighters to fight Brez. Baelor stopped laughing when Brez killed all of them within seconds.
What the
fuck? So then he's like, huh. All right, let me give you 5 elite troops to test this warrior. And he slew all of them, too, within 60 seconds. Brez wasted no time laying out. The Tuatha De, we're not going to adhere to their tribute much longer. I'm here to let you know. I want to kill them as much as you do. And Baelor went, well, he is pretty good with a sword. Why not? He summoned all of his Fomorian strongholds under the threat of annihilation if they didn't answer. And with that, thousands of Fomorian warriors and ships arrived to Tory Island, united for the first time under Baelor of the Evil Eye. Up to this point, it really seems like in the mist, they were like a spread tribes, you know, not really united. Mm-hmm. I would think like the barbarian groups of Rome, within Rome, right around, you know, the fall.
Yeah. I get it.
And so when he gives the order, the biggest fleet that this region has ever seen unfurls their black menacing sails and descend onto the Emerald Isle.
Unleash the sails!
I feel like it's the great armada that you see in Game of Thrones. I forgot what season it was. Was it 6?
When probably
you see
6.
The great armada like sailing. And that's the kind of image I got when writing this. After Brez was deposed, we go back to Ireland, and Nuda was unanimously reelected as High King of the Tuatha De by the warrior elite. He and Maka, who is an aspect of the Morgan, were wed in a grand ceremony followed by their coronation. As a result of the coronation, Maka was transformed from just a goddess of death into a dual goddess of death and sovereignty, which is what she is known for in Irish history.
So Maka is really getting those oath of devotion points.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, I guess she gets it already because that's already a 10. She's a goddess.
You do recall also that, you know, the earlier Maka we were talking about, there is like some traditions where that is the same goddess just reincarnated.
Ooh.
Oh, and we got another story yet when we get to the Ulster cycle. So she's very important. Nuta, in celebration of returning to his throne through this massive feast at Tara for everyone to celebrate.
All right, lads, pop out the Guinness. Maybe some Jamesons.
So everyone's partying super hard. They have not partied since Brez took over. And it, you know, it's going crazy. And while this is going on, a strikingly handsome, well-built young warrior wearing a king's diadem approached the Hall of Tara.
Hello, my name is Alexander.
On his back was a 9-foot spear made of yew wood. Carved into the shaft were runes that pulsed with this radiant light in the twilight.
This isn't stopping me from thinking it's Alexander the Great.
And at its head, the spear glowed as if it was white hot.
I still think it's Alexander.
And one of the guards goes, "Halt! Who goes there?"
Huh, must have been the wind.
And this warrior, just oozing with regal magnificence, replies, "I am Lu, son of Kian, son of Dianket, and Ithinu, daughter of Balor of the Evil Eye, foster son of Telitu, and the daughter of Magmor, the king of Spain, and Manaman MacLear, god of the seas."
Who's this asshole?
Basically, the guard goes, "I hope you haven't come far. This feast is only for kings and masters of arts." And Lu says, "I am not a king yet, but I am not short in skills. Tell me, good sir, do you have a smith at the feast? For I am skilled in smithing." The guard laughs. "Oh, yes, we have Gobanu, the finest smith in the land. Crafted many, many legendary weapons." He goes, "Fine, I'm a harper." He goes, "We have the Daga. And let's just say there's a reason he has many children." "I am a healer. Dianket is the master healer in these halls." "I am a poet. Corpore's laments make the heavens weep. I am the master of the dark arts." At this, the guard just couldn't take it anymore, and he starts laughing. He goes, "The Morrigan drinks in these halls. Their spells make death itself quiver in fear." And he goes, all right, I get it. "You have every type of artist is here, so I will leave you as long as you can answer a single question. You have the greatest poets, harpers, sorcerers, warriors, healers. But do you have someone who is a master in all the arts, as I am?" And the DM said, persuasion roll.
I got it. That's a 5.
No, it was actually a nat 20 in reality.
Oh.
And his persuasion must have been good enough, because the guards goes, "Stay here." Nuta is in the party, and he sees the guards walking up to him, and with a perturbed look on the guard's face, Nuta goes, "What's going on?" He goes, "Sir, there's an unusual man outside. He's very persistent in his desire to enter the feasting hall. He claims himself to be an Ildanek, a master of all arts." "Ildanek, you say? If this is true, then the final battle is upon us." He looked over to his new bride and says, "We have a young man outside claiming to be the Ildanek. Would you mind testing him in a game of Fidkel? You're the best player here." Maka nodded her head and went over to meet this man.
Okay, so what's Fidkel?
Fidkel, I want to say, is like an ancient Irish form of chess, is the best I could gather.
Okay, perfect.
It will come up again and again and again. And when Maka sat down to play with Lu, he beat her in 12 moves.
Damn!
Up at this point, Maka's never been beaten. So that alone impressed the queen. She led him into the feast on a history track. Immediately, many of those presents, including Nuta, recognized the spear on his back. The Spear of Victory, one of the 4 great treasures that was gifted to Manaman MacLear all the way back before the Tuatha De vacated the Northern Islands.
Okay.
Maka went over and she whispered to her husband, "He might be the prophesized Ildanek. I think we need to test him more before we decide anything. But if he is, I think it's better to wield the prophecy than fight against it." Nuta nodded and he spoke, "Ogma, Let this young man be tested by your strength. Ogmog dug his fingers between the flagstones of the floor in the hall, picked it up quite easily, and hurled it out the door, forcing the guards to duck out of the way. Yeah, perfect. Nuta smiled. He walked out the door, found the stone embedded in the hill, grabbed it himself, hurled it, and on a nat 20, the flagstone flew through the wall. This time the guards knew to be out of the way, and it landed exactly where it was dug from, making the hall floor whole again.
Ta-dum.
There was drunken cheers. Place went fucking crazy.
Ah!
It has been a long time since these guys have seen such feats of strength and dexterity.
Weren't they just at war like not too long ago?
Yeah, but like these are like the feats that like they have not been able to do because of Brez like wouldn't let them party and stuff. Part of these feasts, there's all these games and stuff that's always going on, and there's always tests of prowess and might, and stupid games like picking up a stone and hurling it as far as you can is one of them. Lou of the Long Arm, Dagda called out when Lou re-entered the hall. Favor us with song, and he gestured to his harp. The hall gasped. You didn't touch that harp unless you wanted Dagda to take his club that he had and bash your skull in.
Wait a second. You also have a long arm in this? I have a long arm in Tsar Power. Ah, yes.
Lou has many, many, many names. There's a reason he's called the Master of All Arts.
I guess you could say he's a Lou of all trades.
Oh my god. Just terrible today. The harp was this incredible artifact that Dagda created himself. It was carved from an oak tree and inlaid with gold, precious jewels. In the hands of a skilled bard, its music could make a Fomorian weeper dance. It heals sorrows of a broken heart, minds and bodies like ice on a warm day, and its sound is just out of this world tones. We could not comprehend how beautiful this music that it makes. So Lou sat down at Dagda's seat, plucked a few strings, warmed up the crowd with a song about a lusty Fomorian maid. Men and women died over laughing.
Oh, so they're talking about Athenu.
Athenu
is a lusty Fomorian maid.
Yeah, that she was, yeah. And then he sang of the first battle of Moytura, brave and fearless warriors, of a king lost his arm for his people, how the land cried out as rivers of blood ran through it. At this, the men cheered and wept. He then sang a song of doomed romance between a Fomorian princess and a lord of the Tuatha De, of a babe who was thrown off a tower into the storm, of a dethroned queen who found a new purpose in life, of a god who loved them both. It took a lot of those present on a roller coaster, and they felt every imaginable motion. And one proud and stoic warrior was reduced to a sobbing mess once he realized who this young man was.
Who's my son? This is my boy.
And when Lou finished the last song, those present were left breathless, silent, and suspended by an unmistakable non-magical force. Like if you've heard the most amazing, breathtaking performance that just leaves everyone jaw dropped. That's
every breath you take, every move you make, I'll be watching you.
So after Roberto and the hall regained their composure, Nuta spoke up.
All right, you lads, more Guinness!
Lou of the Dawn, you are, as you claim, a master in all arts. My hall is enriched by your presence. But I know you are here to do more than entertain us. And the hall wasn't done being shocked when Nuta stepped from his throne and gestured towards it. His wife, Maka, just looked at him knowingly and nodded her head to her husband, and he says, I believe you have been here to lead us. He turns to his people. We have enjoyed a well-deserved feast, a respite from our troubles. However, a cloud of doom lingers above us, a cloud that has clouded our minds. Baelor has still has dominion over us. I refuse to give him another ounce of grain. Into that, the hall cheered. And then he put up his hand.
The good one or the new one?
Nuda, the current one.
This no, is the current one. Yeah, did he put his new hand up or the good one?
That's a good question. The myths do not tell us.
So it was his reattached arm that he put up. You can see the little like herb on the herb line that's connecting it. Little sinews.
Actually, no, the way it's written, you do not.
No, this is the Quest for Power canon. I'm sorry.
And then he put his hand up and he says, I also refuse to bring about the ruin of our entire race. We have all sacrificed too much to get to this point. He turned to Lou and he says, I give you my throne for 13 days. Speak and we shall listen. Order and we shall act. Lou knew he was born for this moment. And very confidently, he walked up to the king's place and took command. He went, we have no time for honor. We cannot defeat the Fomorians as we are. You have to remain under the Fomorians for the time being. This is not a war we can win yet. However, there is hidden magic in each of you, waiting to be awakened. But first, we must unlock this dormant power in your leaders. And then he went, Nuda, Ogma, Dianket, Gobanu, the Dagda. You are no longer lords, but mere novices. Tonight, attend to whatever business you have. We leave at dawn. But when you come back to your families, you will no longer be mere immortals, but gods.
But we can be immortals, immortals, but not for long, for long.
And with that, Lou and his new novices vanished to another plane of existence for a year and a day. Plane shift.
Okay, but he has a throne for 13 days.
What happens when you go to certain planes of existences and time doesn't really... So when they returned, everyone but Lou was shocked to find out they were only gone for 24 hours. But...
It's a hyperbolic time chamber. Got it.
Through their adventures in this mysterious other world, they went from level 10 characters to level 20 godlike character players.
All right.
It's the only way it could ever make sense of how they got from point A to point B. So that's what you're getting. That's the canon.
Fine. I'll allow it.
And from there, we shift to the shores of Ulster. Hundreds of ships, the black sails covering the horizon.
Now we are ready to sail for the horn. Way, roll and go.
On the beaches in the dead of night, led by the traitor Brez, sentries were cut down before they could raise the alarm. From there, several villages and towns were surrounded. Thousands of arrows were lit and launched towards thatched roofs. Ulster countryside lit up like a bonfire to reveal thousands of drowned lords, gleefully cutting down any who resisted them and slaughtering others for sport.
Hell yeah.
Within hours, rivers of blood ran through several cities, towns were made into burning hellscapes, and entire villages were reduced to ash and bone.
Hell yeah! Let's go, Fomorians.
So the leader of the Tuatha De were awakened by bells ringing across the hill of Tara. Several runners came up telling him that Ulster had fallen, along with many of its lords. Nuda took command of the kingdom. He sent his wife and her sisters to wreak havoc upon the invading forces and contain them in Ulster.
Hellfire, this fire.
And if you recall, just in case you forget, that means the Morrigan, essentially, is going to go just wreak havoc.
The Morrigan! Ah!
He commanded Lou as his top commander to rally all the Tuatha De that have spread across the island and mobilize them for war in the western province of Connaught. And then he hesitantly asked his best friend, the Dagda, to use his harp and bardic skill to infiltrate the Fomorians and create as much of a delay in their advance as possible.
All right, Bard, I need you to be the distraction. You mean all attention's on me? Yes. Fantastic. Just what I signed up for.
Exactly. Nuta took the forces of Tara and led them to Connacht. And at daybreak, small skirmishes kind of erupted all across the borders between the two forces. Neither side was willing to commit the bulk of their forces yet. The Formorians are still landing on the beaches, and the Tuatha De Dé, you know, they're still marching. It's kind of half-hearted skirmishes that occur quite a bit in medieval times. And ancient times, for that matter. The Dagda then began his best performance yet. He gathered an intense feeling of peace, love, and joy in his soul. And in this moment, he harnessed more magic than even arched druids could wield.
And then he let out the song, Baby Shark, Baby Shark, Baby Shark, Baby Shark.
That would be amazing. If it was a chaos one, that would fit perfectly. Anyway, he did the opposite. He picked up his harp and he sang this sweetest tune as he entered the Fomorian camp, putting thousands of hardened warriors and powerful Fomorian druids to sleep with a smile across their faces as bliss entered their mind and body.
Boats and hoes, gotta get me some boats and hoes.
There you hoes. Go. And he played and he sang as day turned into night and night back into day. His boundless joy and happiness kept the spell working and fueled his body as he became this massive conduit of peace, love, and joy. Dagda wasn't the only one wielding world-bending magic. In the camp lay Morvok, the Blight Weaver, an ancient corrupted druid, lay half asleep, and he was able to remain conscious by harnessing the slaughter, the fear, and the unspeakable horrors that were occurring in Ulster to fuel his twisted magic, and was the only one able to put a fight up against Dagda's magical weaves. And the Dagda was capable of more joy and bliss than this druid thought possible. After several days of ecstatic agony from the Dagda's joy, he found tiniest bit of doubt buried deep within the Dagda's magical weaves. And he felt for the thread, and then he was able to cut a little sliver into it, free himself from the Dagda's influence, and then poured all of the torment from Ulster into that seed of doubt as if his life depended on it. And with that, the Dagda felt a shadow pass over his heart, and then all at once his spell weaves were burned away by a foul magic. All around the Dagda, Fomorians started opening their eyes, stumbling their feet, shaking their heads, going, "What the hell was that all about?" Then they all turned to Dagda, who ran.
run away!
Those who had the sentinel feet and tried to stop him had their heads caved in from his legendary club Bone Cradle. So you got that going for him.
Which is nice.
He managed to reach the thick forest and casted a minor invisibility spell as he sprinted away from the Fomorian camp. He was severely weakened from the amount of magic he wielded and was in several points of exhaustion. As a DM, how much exhaustion would you give on that one?
Two?
There you go. So we'll do a level exhaustion 2. And the spell only lasted long enough for his pursuers to lose contact of him. They hunted him throughout the entire day, but for some reason they couldn't catch him. Finally, at dusk, they called it off. The Dagda stumbled into the river Ushin and passed out from exhaustion. When he regained consciousness, he was delighted to see the most ravishing goddess of the Tuatha De
Dé, Maka,
the Gorgon,
hey,
washing herself in the river, singing a very startlingly beautiful, haunting song. And she said,
"Hey, you, finally awake."
"Finally, you're awake." And he went, "Which sister are you?" And she smiles, "That is for us to know, and for you to not worry about." She smiled and walked over to him. She started rubbing his shoulders, pouring restorative magic back into his body. And she seductively said to his ear, "That was an impressive performance." And he went, "It wasn't enough. The fucking druid shredded my spell weaves. He was a force we're going to have to deal with. Their forces are gathering on the plain of pillars. It appears there's going to be a second battle of Moytura." She went and gathered herself in front of him, and she looked him in the eye and she said, "All magic is fueled by fear and agony. Don't feed him." Then she had lust burning in her eyes. She said, "Lu had returned with an army. You fearlessly walked into enemy lines and bought us the time you needed. It is time for you to be properly rewarded." As the god of fertility wasn't about to say no.
Oh, I caught it right with the Bouchika Wow Wow then.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's one of the most famous acts that occurred during this whole saga.
How did Nuda feel about this?
The texts say the Morrigan.
Yes, his wife is one of the Morrigan, so.
Yeah, so, but it could also be Nemain, or it could be Bathe.
It's Bathe, because what did he see her doing? Bathing.
You're just full of them tonight. When dawn arose the next morning, the two armies stood facing each other, ready to clash. The first week of fighting was mainly just the unnamed badass champions of both sides cutting each other's down. Basically warriors who served as filler for their blades. Both sides were holding back the real warriors, the kings, the princesses. They're waiting for their time to strike. It feels like it's a bloodletting. Like when I imagine it like fantasy World War I trench warfare in ancient Ireland. Warriors are just constantly being thrown into this meat grinder. And after fearsome fighting, untold proud champions dying, the Fomorians notice something strange.
These nuts.
They're dead, stayed dead, but the Tuatha De fighters returned each morning. Their weapons stayed broken, and the Irish weapons were mysteriously restored.
It's like you have the goddess of death on your side.
Brez, as a token of goodwill and to earn some honor back should the Fomorians lose, he sent his son Rudon back to Brigid, the boy's mother. And the little kid was hanging around the adults, and he watched in awe of the Smith Gobanu fixing the weapons blunted from the day's fighting with uncanny precision and speed. And he asked Gobanu if he could help, which had to warm the Smith's, you know, heart. My son does this crap all the time. He loves to help, and it's adorable. You could just see it. And Gobanu asked him to stack the weapons in the cart, and the boy did with a cheerful demeanor. I can see it, you know, my son loves just lining crap up. And when Gobanu was banging this piece of hot metal on the anvil, Rudon took one of the spears and hurled it through Gobanu, a spear exploding out of his chest. Gobanu pulled the spear out from himself and then hurled it back at the boy, striking him and killing him instantly. Brigid, who witnessed everything happen in seconds, was in total shock. He threw herself on her boy and let out unearthly shrieks and cries of devastation that cannot be put into words. She poured all of her healing magic into him, screaming for him to wake up, but her baby boy was just staring at her lifeless. His soul had been already torn to the other world. She didn't care. She kept trying until she exhausted herself into near fatal, you know, levels and collapsed into a coma. Gobanu was rushed to the medical attendants and was able to be saved by Irmid, the daughter of the Enket. And then all of a sudden, three ravens who heard the call of death dove into the scene, materializing into the Morrigan. She waved her hands over the dead boy and through her powerful magic witnessed the events leading to this tragedy. I forgot what spell that is, if it's any spell in D&D. It's like a magic where you can remember events. I forgot what it's called in Harry Potter, where you can do that.
I don't care too much about Harry Potter, but that's just a feat.
Is that just a feat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's
cool. Keep in mind.
Oh, yeah. And so with cold detachment, she looked at the champions and she said, "This was Brez doing. He sent the boy back to Brigid to assassinate Gobu the Smith, Without him, the damaged weapons of our champions could not be remended. At this, cold, righteous fury exploded out of the Morrigan. She gathered Bridget's unconscious form and took their beloved shield sister to her father's tent. That night, torchlight was the only night lit in the Tuatha De. Words weren't spoken. Everyone knew the next day they were going to annihilate the Fomorians or be annihilated themselves. The Dagda's harp, for the first time since they set foot on the island, lay silent for the night. So the next morning, the full force of the Tuatha De formed against the full force of the Fomorians. It was time to end this ancient feud once and for all. The Fomorians were led by Baelor of the Evil Eye, Brez, son of Ilatha, and Indek, who we don't have time to get into, but they were important Fomorian leaders as well. Well, Ilatha, obviously, but Indek. The Tuatha De were led by Nuta, at his side Maka, Lu, Ogma, and the Dagda. Unfortunately, Bridget was still unconscious and was guarded protectively by Nemain and Baith. No one dared challenge them as to why they weren't going to be in the thick of the fighting, where their powers served best. They were protecting their shield sister. And with that, the armies roared and crashed into each other. Bronze pierced into flesh. Men, women, monsters fell in heaps. Battlefield thundered with raining down spells from sorcerers and druids of all sides. It's the Battle of Geonosis, fantasy style. So many warriors were cut down that their collective blood soaked in the field. Champions and warriors kept slipping on the blood that was covering everything and losing their feet, only to have their heads removed from their body. Meanwhile, Nemain and Baith were watching over Bridget when they suddenly felt as a piece of their soul been ripped out of their bodies. Their shrieks of agony were so terrible that Bridget was violently awakened from her coma. And with that, we cut back to the battle where the lifeless bodies of Maka lay and her eyes staring up to the void.
Oh shit, Maka's dead.
Baelor laughed a cruel laugh at Nuda's fury, and then he used his eye to kill him using power word kill. However, as he opened his eye and cast his evil spell, Lu slung a stone straight through Baelor's evil eye, driving out the back of his head as Baelor fell dead. And with that, we end the life and reign of Maka, daughter of Ernmas, the Phantom Queen, Nuta, Silver Arm, King of the Tuatha De Danann, Baelor of the Evil Eye, Son of Dot, Son of Neat, High King of the Fomorians. You ready to read them? kind of sudden, huh?
Yes.
That's how it shows up in the sources, too.
Royal power.
All right, we're going to complete them in order of their deaths. So we're going to do the whole thing through Maka first. There isn't much on Maka in terms of her political power being a queen of the Tuatha De Danann. In fact, the only reason we have an inkling that she was a queen is that she's a sovereignty goddess. And in typically Celtic mythology, the sovereignty goddess bestows a king his sovereign status by having sex with him. And she was particularly a sovereignty goddess over the region of Ulster. The only reason that we have any reason to think she was married to Nuta at all, despite being a goddess of kingship, is because of one line in the Second Battle of Moytura text. Just says, "The Nuta Silverhand and Maka, the daughter of Ernmas, fell at the hands of Baelor, grandson of Net." That's it. So a lot of their romance and stuff I had to come up with because there's nothing. It was just one line. In terms of magical power, she's an aspect of the fucking Morrigan, who's a triple goddess of war, victory, fate, death, destiny. The Morrigan's going to be a real problem for many of our future characters. Maka is going to have still more, you know, influence in our time to come. What do you think?
Thinking of four.
A four.
Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting. Because I'm gonna give her more for like Oath of Devotion and Bardic Inspiration Legacy, but like for royal power, like I'm thinking like specifically politically, just a four.
The fact that she's a sovereignty goddess is why I want to give her a 10.
She's a yeah, but that's Oath of Devotion.
This, yeah, but sovereignty is about royal power, is it not?
But she's a goddess, so that's obviously, she's bestowing it to people, so it's not royal power, it's just got religion.
She has power to give. She is bestowing the power of kingship. How powerful is that?
I'm still giving it 4. You're not convincing me otherwise.
I'm giving it 10.
I think that's our biggest discrepancy.
That's funny. I love it.
Okay, so with a 4 to 10, that's a 14 in royal power.
It'd be so boring if we agreed all the time.
Infamy.
Other than she's an aspect of the Morrigan, but I don't view the Morrigan as an evil entity, more of just death incarnate.
I mean, that's at least a 3 for me if you're just death incarnate.
Death isn't really evil, though, so to speak, in the grand
scheme. I saw what she did to that one king and made him basically thirst.
She deserved it. He killed her mother.
I'm giving her a 3.
I'm giving her a 0.
All right, it's a 3 for infamy. Oath of devotion.
She's a sovereignty goddess and an aspect of the Morrigan.
Yes, a 10, obviously.
Yeah, 10.
20 for oath of devotion. Bardic inspiration.
Alrighty, so here's part of this section where I'm going to tell you what's real and what I did to make up to connect parts of her story. In the text of the first Battle of Moytura, she's considered an aspect of the Morrigan and kind of her own character like her sisters. Yes, she did rain hell onto the Firbolg before that war really got going. She was married to Nuta, but that's as far as we know. She could have married him before they reached Ireland. I'm trying to avoid flashbacks too much. I had to use some of it and thought a good placement for their romance would actually be between when he lost his arm as symbolic of Nuta reclaiming sovereignty over Ireland. As I said in Royal Power, she was killed by Baelor. Some other notes. This is Maka's first form on the earthly plane. She will be later reborn as Maka Mon Ruath, who was our very first Irish queen that we went through when we did our bonus episodes, which we'll probably go back into again. She will be reborn as a very pivotal character in the famous epic of the Tawn from the Ulster Cycle. What do you got?
Thinking of 10.
Really?
I like your story. It's a Morrigan.
It is a great story. I also will give a 10.
That's a 20 for Oath of Devotion. All right, Legacy.
I have no idea how to judge this section for her. She and Nuta have no recorded children, dynasty-wise. However, she left an impact on Irish mythology that is, in my opinion, more prevalent than Nuta. She's considered a sovereignty goddess, which is a massive legacy in and of itself. She's gonna appear again and again and again.
I mean, I already had it down for a 10, because I knew the Morrigan before we started this.
Even though she's just one aspect, but yes.
Yeah. So what are you giving her?
Yeah, 10.
Alrighty. For 10, it's a 20 in Oath of Devotion, which puts her at 77 overall.
Points don't always matter. How much is that in terms of other Irish?
She's second overall.
Against who?
Congo Claringneck.
Oh, that's right. Anyway, in the annals of history, is she good enough to be placed in the Hall of Legends? Just good enough to be an NPC, or does she deserve to be burned at the stake, her ashes in the wind?
It's Maka. It's fucking Maka.
Yeah, Hall of Legends, baby.
Alrighty, Nuta, royal power.
Nuta comes into our story as king of the Tuatha De. No surviving records state as to how this happened. He is considered a fair and just king, beloved by his people. Once his arm is sliced off, he's forced to give up his throne because of the laws that no king can have a blemish. He retakes the throne, but then he gives it to Lu for a hot minute before taking it back. His second reign is more fighting the Fomorians, and he dies in the final battle against them. However, some traditions place this time as more like 20 years, but in Irish mythology, linear time just goes out the window. You might as well just say it's a dragon break.
I'm thinking of 6.
I'm thinking of 4.
Alrighty. So with a 6 and a 4, it's a 10 in royal power. Infamy.
Nada. I got nothing.
Zero. He was a just guy. He was good. Like,
no. Yeah.
Oath of Devotion.
So he's a god, but there's not much hard surviving evidence as to what god he really was. The god, the Irish monks turned him from a god to a king. And they did a very good job of that. And there's like a shitload of conjecture across multiple different traditions, like everything from the, you know, mythological cycle as to what he is. But we don't really know.
No, zero.
I'm going to give him a 5 because we're missing something.
Alrighty. Oath of Devotion is a 5. Bardic Inspiration.
So these are the beats to his story. He was the first official king of the Tuatha De. He married Maka, aspect of the Morgan, at some point. During the Battle of the Firbolgs, his arm was sliced off by Shren and he was deposed. At first, Dianket, the chief healer, gave him a silver arm, which was still a blemish. He couldn't be king. However, Miak, son of Dianket, was able to regrow his arm, and then Miak was brutally murdered for really saving the Tuatha De. He handed his rule off to Lu for 13 days as a gesture of good faith in the boy, and then he was cut down by Baelor at the final battle.
I'm thinking like a 5. It was just like an okay story.
I think 2. Everyone around him is more interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So that's a 7 for Bardic Inspiration. Legacy.
As I said, in Oath of Devotion, there's a ridiculous amount of arguing over who the god Nuta was, but the Druids didn't keep written records, and the Irish scribes either rewrote or bastardized the Celtic gods. However, in some medieval texts, the Tuatha De are called the race of Nuta. So he's got something there.
Give him like a 1.
I'll give him a 2.
So that's a 3 in Legacy. So that brings him to a total of 25 points.
Oh, man, his wife kicked his ass. However, that doesn't matter. In the annals of history, is he good enough to be placed in the Hall of Legends? He's an NPC. Or is he so pathetic that he should be burned at the stake?
Lesser noble.
Yeah, yeah, couldn't agree more. He is definitely the quintessential Skyrim NPC king.
Yeah, like, he's fine. Alrighty, now time for the fan favorite.
Oh, baby, here we go.
Royal power!
Baelor of the Evil Eye.
Baelor is easily the most powerful Fomorian king, full stop. He's the big bad of Irish mythology. Done. Like, that's what he is. He governs through terror. His evil eye is literally both a literal and symbolic representation of the soul-crushing horror he inspires. He seemed to have united a decentralized collective under the tribes of his banner. Ultimately, he was killed in battle because no one can outrun a prophecy.
10.
Yeah, 100%.
He united the Fomorians, which is like, and everyone feared him. He took over the Tuatha De. Like,
he's the big bad.
He's the big bad. Infamy!
Well, he is the big bad. Attempted murder of your grandchild isn't great. But to him, to be fair, it was a life or death situation for him.
I mean, quite literally.
So, and it proved to be a death, you know, life or death situation. His taxes he imposed upon the Tuatha De left them destitute for years. I'm not going to bring that up to real time, but it's modern day.
I mean, taxes, tariffs, gas price increase. I don't know.
So, yeah. What do you think? 5. I mean, he had an evil eye that, like, killed people on sight.
I mean, but that's just the power. So, like, a 5.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one. I don't really feel strong.
All right, that's a 10 for infamy. Oath of Devotion. He said, fuck them gods.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he was real, I'm sure he was devoted to some gods, but we have no information at all.
He killed the gods. What are you talking about?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm giving him a 10 for killing gods.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that.
He killed Baka. Come on. Like.
Aspect of the Morrigan.
He kills an aspect of the Morrigan. That's like, it should be negative 10, but like, this is great.
Killing an aspect of death is a fascinating thing.
Yeah, that's a 10 for me.
Yep.
20 100%. For Oath of Devotion. Bardic Inspiration.
Balor is the big bad of Battle of Moytura, Irish mythology. Despite that, in certain regions of Ireland, Balor is looked upon with reverence and not the big bad, but more like an embodiment of natural forces and chaos, which if you look in a lot of Irish mythological interpretations, is that's what the Fomorians were. They're the embodiments of natural forces and chaos that the ancient Irish had to deal with when they first, you know, were on the island. His story is expanded upon in many oral traditions that weren't necessarily written down by the scribes. I found so many different, like, they were like real traditions. It's just, it wasn't like written down by the official sources. It's what people passed down to their families generation after generation. He is a major character in many forms of entertainment, in fantasy novels, video games, board games. He's in it all.
10. He's
100%.
Great story.
Love Balor.
He's fantastic. So that's a 20 in Bardic Inspiration. And finally, Legacy. His evil eye is what Sauron's eye is based off of.
Yeah, so that also could be Bardic Inspiration. We forgot to say that.
No, but it's more like his legacy. Cause it's
oh, that's true. Generations of characters from Irish mythology can trace their origins to Balor. Without him, there is no Lu, and without no Lu, there is no Cuchulainn.
Oh, 10. Without Cuchulainn, I wouldn't want to do this Irish thing.
Yeah, 10.
Oh,
did he get 100?
With a 20 in Royal Power, a 10 in Infamy, a 20 in Oath of Devotion, Bardic Inspiration, and Legacy, he is at 90 points, and it is now in first place.
I love it. Points aren't everything, Roberto, but I guess I have to go through with this. It's what the format demands. Is he good enough to be placed in the Hall of Legends? Is he fine? You know, 90 points, whoop-de-doo. He's an NPC. Or is he so despicable that he should be burned at the stake?
Well, Michael, you said it yourself. He's a very despicable person. Come on, he's of the evil eye. I want to burn him just for the sake
of... I want Hall of Legends. He's a legend.
No, let's burn him because it'll be so,
let it
so
be,
good.
Let it be decided by the dice. All and right. You roll well, so I want to see that nat 20.
All right, what do I got to get to get to burn him?
You need to get a
10 or under. Lower. 5.
Nice.
So we're burning him at the stake, but burning at the stake does not mean you're not going through. Because Lesser Noble is more like the Legendary Monarch means you're fantastic. For me, means you're fantastic. You did great things. You deserve to be exemplary. Burnt to the stake means you're deplorable. You're horrible. You're worth remembering for your bad things, which is why we're burning you.
So, like Sigismund?
Yeah, I hated him, but like I still remember him.
Oh, I mean, yeah, he's the one we talk about all the time. So yeah.
Yeah, and that and Gundobad. So it's like
yeah,
but Gundobad was great because he was like fun to talk about. Which is why he's Legendary Monarch. Sigismund sucked, which is why he's burned to the stake. But, you know,
Clothair wasn't exactly nice, and he made it to the Hall of Legends.
No, that's different. Oh, but Clothair is technically still our top point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
By 1 point.
that's incredible.
Alrighty, so we're burning Bane of the Evil at the stake, but does that mean he's not great?
I loved him. He was fantastic. Such a fun story. Loved.
And this episode, we got all three rulings.
Yeah, we did.
And, alrighty.
So that brings us to the end of our arc on the kind of first big arc of the Tuatha Dé and the Fomorians. We will never see the Fomorians again. This is it.
Oh, damn. Okay.
So let us know what you thought of the story. You can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you enjoy our style of storytelling, we have some premium episodes for your pleasure if you become a member of our nobility by signing up at thequestforpower.com. If that's not your thing, that's fine. Just give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you pod for podcasts. Next episode, we're going to finish the second battle of Moytura, continue our story from there. And finally, with that, the kings and queen are dead.
Long live the next ruler.